This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
And this is David Swanson at the PeopleSpeakRadio.net. Thank you for joining us, and we are very privileged to have with us as a guest for the next hour a well-known author, certainly known to many out there listening, Mark Crispin Miller, who is the author, among many other books, of an excellent book that's been updated over the past few years on election fraud called Fooled Again, and another book coming out in a week or so called Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy 2000 through 2008. Mark, it's great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me on, David. I do appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. Tell me about this problem of election fraud 2000 to 2008. I mean, I know there were some glitches in 2000, but the Supreme Court straightened that all out, and then everything's been sort of fixed with better technology, right?
Yeah. Well, in our dreams, don't we all wish that were the case? Yeah, you know, it's really amazing. Your question implies the primary problem here, which is not actually a mechanical or a technological problem. It's more of a psychological problem, and that is the fact that this subject is taboo, and the abundant evidence of election fraud and widespread vote suppression, not only in 2000, but in every subsequent election, all of this is something that the press and the Democratic Party, for the most part, refuses to discuss. So very few people know, for instance, and this is going to sound like I've said the Martians have landed, but it is a fact that Al Gore won the popular vote in Florida in 2000. The media consortium that counted all the votes released a report. The report is online, and the report gives us the numbers, and contrary to almost universal opinion and the constant assertions of the media, Al Gore won in Florida. That's just one example of the kind of basic thing that we just don't know. Now, since 2000, you know, and that election
issue. This is, Mark, this is even taking into account chads that were left hanging and people who were improperly removed from the rolls or not able to vote or voted on the wrong day or sent in their ballots from overseas and they weren't counted. This is taking into account all of the things that may have gone wrong.
Yeah.
Al Gore still won.
Miraculously, despite a great deal of election fraud and vote suppression by the Jeb Bush machine in Florida, for example, the improper disenfranchisement of several thousand Floridians as felons when they weren't felons, and despite the deliberate acceptance by the Republicans of late or bogus military votes, and let me add that Joe Lieberman insisted that all those be counted, despite things like that and all the sort of Jim Crow tactics that you just listed, Gore did win anyway. Now this knocked an immense mythology into a cocked hat. You know, the people, for example, persist in blaming Ralph Nader for Gore's loss. Well, you know, aside from the fact that the problem for Gore was not Nader, but Bush and the Bush machine, Gore didn't even lose for Florida, you know. So, you know, there are so many basic facts that we have to kind of, you know, clarify that it's extremely difficult to talk about this problem. But let me just say, in answer to your first question, that the problem of election fraud has gotten much, much worse since 2000, as you know, the use of electronic voting machines, for example, has spread to most of the country, so that well over 80% of the districts in the United States use one or another of the, you know, computerized voting machines, and that these machines are eminently hackable, manufactured by private companies with close ties to the Republican Party. I mean, we could go on and on. That's just one way in which our elections have become, let's just say, insecure. And that doesn't even begin to account for the things that have happened since 2006 and that are happening right now and that will affect the next election. Things like the Department of Justice's conducting voter purges nationwide and making voter registration drives more difficult. The Supreme Court is clearly inclined to uphold the Indiana photo ID law, which, you know, is a way to preempt votes as opposed to, you know, throwing them out electronically. The fact is that, you know, we, despite John McCain's, what I consider to be patent unelectability, and the Republican Party's dismal condition, because we're in, you know, in the midst of a very, very serious recession, that party has been pursuing a losing war that's unpopular with at least two-thirds of the people in this country. You know, despite all that, it is quite possible that we could be looking at another Republican presidency that's not based on the will of the electorate.
On that frightening note, let me inform people how they can get in on this conversation, because I know you're going to want to ask some questions of Mark Crispin Miller, who is the author of not only Fooled Again, which is one of the best books I know on this topic, but a new book I have not yet read called Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy 2000 to 2008. You can call and get in on this conversation from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada toll-free at 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Or anywhere else in the world, 877-489-6300. Now, what struck me, Mark, in reading Fooled Again, was that you don't pin the blame for even the electronic voting fraud that we've seen in recent years on a handful of people or three guys with cigars in a room. I mean, the suggestion that comes out of this book for me is that there's really a culture of election theft, and that there have got to be dozens, hundreds, thousands of people, largely Republican people, spread around the country who are actively involved or going along with not just typical Jim Crow suppression tactics, but blatantly dishonest theft and hacking and fraud. Am I reading that right?
Well, yes, you are. Now, let me make something clear. First of all, it does not take a lot of people to alter vote counts electronically, which is an undetectable kind of fraud. That's something that you can do with a couple of people, one guy even. So those who are in denial of the problem argue, as they often do, well, this can't be happening because there are so many people involved, someone would confess. That's actually false because, you know, as we've seen time and time again, you know, electronic voting is not something that requires a mob to pull it off. Now, having said that, you know, I'll turn to your specific question. It is true that while there are undeniably people who have, you know, lit up those cigars in secret boardrooms, I mean, somebody like Karl Rove or Ken Blackwell in Ohio or Catherine Harris in Florida, these are people who are intimately involved in a certain amount of supervision, you know, orchestrating a kind of general fraud. At the same time, as I try to point out and Fooled Again, there has indeed, for the last 7 or 8 years, been a culture of election fraud and vote suppression. That is to say, the Republican Party, you know, really since the early 90s, has become a party dominated by an extremist fringe. You know, this is not our grandparents' Republican Party. This is not simply the party of old-fashioned conservatism. It's not even the party of Goldwater Republicanism. It's a party that was basically taken over by the so-called Christian right. And, you know, there are cases where we can actually see how the sort of foot soldiers of the movement are people who are sincerely convinced that they're doing something not only patriotic, but deeply pious, you know, that they're doing God's will when they interfere with an evil majority. Now, let me mention something in the new book, Loser Take All, which is a collection that I have edited. It's got 14 essays in it by, you know, all kinds of great people, you know, as well as my own preface and my 12 Steps to Save U.S. Democracy, which I hasten to mention so people don't, you know, listen to this show and then go slit their wrists.
I was planning to go through each of the 12.
Well, we'll go through those. But there's an essay in Loser Take All by an election reform activist and a physicist named Dave Griscom in Arizona, who describes how the voting machines in Pima County, Arizona, were the expression is hacked and stacked. There's a kind of sophisticated way in which those machines can be manipulated, Democratic votes erased, and the whole thing covered up. But the important point is that kind of technological work also depended in that county on the collusion of really ferocious Christianist true believers who worked the polls. They were actual poll workers, and they interfered with efforts to monitor the race, and they became, you know, kind of insanely abusive and called people pagans and liberal scum. You know, we're talking about a kind of anti-democratic, and I mean that with a small d, anti-democratic fervor that's fundamentally paranoid and extremely dangerous, and the kind of thing that, you know, any healthy democracy has to contend with.
Now, Mark, I live in a fairly progressive town. I don't know of anyone here that I would describe in those terms, and yet I've debated this issue with the local poll workers and supervisors and election officials, and they all accuse me, just as demanding peace, you get accused of opposing the troops. Well, demanding clean and verifiable elections, you get accused of opposing the election workers. And so I say to them, look, let's have hand counted paper ballots. And they say, well, you don't trust us. You don't trust us to keep a close watch on these machines and use them honestly. And I say, no, I trust you more. I want you to count these things by hand on paper. But in the case of the poll workers you just described, I don't trust them more. I wouldn't want them counting paper ballots either.
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems to be a problem there.
Well, the thing, you know, hand-counted paper ballots, that's a system that would, of course, take place with, you know, all, members of all sides watching. And that's the most honest system there is. Paul Leto is a great election defense attorney, and who also has an essay in Loser Take All. As he has argued, there is no more honest and reliable system than a system in which all sides are watching what happens, and what happens transparently. That's far more reliable and verifiable than anything that goes on with computers. Now, the election workers who get defensive in that way and who claim you don't trust them don't really understand that we're supposed to live in a system of laws and not of men. What's to prevent those eminently trustworthy neighbors of yours, you know, from meeting with a terrible accident and being replaced by somebody else? The fact is, you can't simply base an election system on trust. It's unreasonable and naive to argue that, you know, a system should be based on trust. Here, you know, for once, I turn to the wisdom of Ronald Reagan, you know, who said memorably to Mikhail Gorbachev, trust but verify. I think the same principle has to apply to elections. You know, so if election workers don't want to go to the trouble of counting ballots the way they do in Canada and many, many other countries, you know, they should find another job, you know. This is really not supposed to be the work of bureaucrats. It's supposed to be the work of citizens. And this gets us into a much bigger conversation about the problem with our elections being that it's dominated by the two political parties, and that's really fundamentally something we have to think about changing.
Extremely well said, and a huge conversation, but we do have people starting to call in, and I'd like to include them in this conversation.
Sure.
Scott from Tampa, have you got a question for Mark Crispin Miller?
Yeah, I have a quick question. I'll just put it out there and take off. I appreciate you guys having this conversation. You're speaking about transparency, and I was looking on the... I was watching Democracy Now! In an interview with Harvey Wasserman.
Yeah, right.
And he was talking about the situation in 2004, where apparently the Department of Homeland Security came in, and when they were doing a recount, and they ended up saying there was an alert, and they actually locked the place down, they locked the media out, and when they opened the doors, the votes were all gone. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, absolutely. That's an important question. What happened was this. It had nothing to do with the Department of Homeland Security. This was in Warren County, Ohio, okay, and this is one of the many, many pieces of quite persuasive evidence that Ohio was stolen. Bobby Kennedy Jr., who incidentally also has an essay in Loser Take All, did a terrific piece for Rolling Stone in the summer of 2006, in which he went through all the evidence of fraud in Ohio, including Warren County, and he estimated conservatively that John Kerry won or would have won Ohio by 350,000 votes. Now, the alleged margin of victory for Bush was 118,000. So Kennedy estimates, again, conservatively, that Kerry actually won Ohio by three times as many votes as Bush supposedly won by. Now, one of the crucial things that happened in Warren County was this. Warren County is a rural county. Its entire population is about half the size of Akron's, okay? Now, this was one of the last counties to be reporting its votes on election night, and it was obvious, you know, that they were looking to see how many votes they needed to put Bush over the top. I say this because all of a sudden, late at night, the authorities proclaimed that there'd been a terrorist alert on the premises there in Warren County where they were counting the votes, a terrorist alert in this, you know, largely rural county. And they claimed it came from the FBI, and they did lock down the place. They did throw out the press. And Harvey Wasserman's colleague and fellow activist, Bob Fitrakis, has sworn affidavits from two people who saw ballots being removed from the premises and taken to an unauthorized location under the control of a GOP operative. Bob Fitrakis also has an essay in Loser Take All. Okay, now, the next day it turned out, and it has just been reconfirmed in the last couple of weeks by the Cincinnati Inquirer, which did further research into this, that the FBI never told anybody in Warren County that there was a terrorist alert. The county sheriff has said there was no terrorist alert. The guy who claimed that there was, this one particular party operative in Warren County, was lying. In other words, there is copious evidence that this was completely illegitimate. It had nothing to do with any terrorists. It was a way to get rid of the press, get rid of the monitors, and basically dump votes. This actually happened. And it's just, as I say, one small piece of the whole dismal puzzle that is Ohio and the 2004 election.
And this was one of the many, many stories that, if you were looking for them and you had access to the Internet, were available immediately, even
exactly.
Prior to John Kerry conceding his so-called loss in that election.
Exactly, exactly.
And yet, there's been, up to this date, almost a complete blackout. I mean, the story you suggested earlier of Al Gore having won in 2000, that was at least in print, buried on page 18 with a misleading headline. These dozens and hundreds of stories have never seen the light of day.
Well, that's right. And I'll tell you something else, David, as long as we're on the subject here. The biggest, and you know from reading me afterward to Fooled Again that, you know, that this is the case. The problem here with the 2004 election is not simply that the mainstream press stayed mum. That's a serious problem. But the real damage was done by the left press in 2005 and 2006. I'm talking about Mark Hertzgard in Mother Jones, Russ Baker on TomPaine.com, David Korn in The Nation, Andrew Gumbel writing for The Nation, and Farad Manjoo in Salon. All these guys bent over backwards to try to debunk what they called the theory of the stolen election in Ohio. And Mark and Russ and these guys all claimed that they looked into the Warren County situation and found that it wasn't the case. And they all based their arguments on what some Democrat told them. I mean, these are guys who basically, you know, parachuted into Ohio for a few minutes, talked to some Democrat, some clueless or, you know, for all we know, complicit Democrats, a very corrupt system in that state. They were assured by said person, oh, there's nothing to that, you know, nothing to see here, just move along. And on that basis, they actually came out and said that this stuff's overblown, it's conspiracy theory, and that did a lot of damage, did a tremendous amount of damage, because when people representing the left came out and said, you know, this is groundless, a whole lot of people in the mainstream press and in Congress said, well, geez, if they think that this is bogus, clearly the people who think that it's not bogus are insane. So you're absolutely right. This stuff remains unknown to most people. And, you know, a lot of people you wouldn't expect to take the wrong side on this really have a lot of explaining to do, because, nothing is more important than this, David. Nothing ultimately is more important than this. I don't care what issue is your favorite issue or what side of the political fence you're on. If we don't have the power to vote our representatives in and out of office, we have no power whatsoever. We can make no progress whatsoever on any front. Now, I'm not saying that voting is the only way to effect democratic change. You know, we're all raised to believe that voting is the whole ballgame, and I think that's really wrong, because that's just it's a biennial exercise. You know, if that's all we had at our disposal, we'd be pretty weak indeed. There's lobbying, there's protests, there are strikes, you know, there are lawsuits, there's all kinds of ways to be politically active. But fundamentally, if you don't have the right to vote, none of those other means will really amount to anything, because if the government feels that it is absolutely immune to electoral change, it will behave with a kind of brazenness that we have never seen before in our history, but that we're seeing now. You know, the best way to understand how a Dick Cheney could say on TV, when told two-thirds of the people are against the war, the fact that he could say, so, this, as far as I'm concerned, is further, albeit indirect, evidence that these guys fear nothing at the ballot box, you see. Bush, too. We've never had a president more brazen in his defiance to or his indifference toward the popular will. And this could only happen in a system where the people in power are confident that they can win elections regardless of the majority will.
It reminds me of Karl Rove's confidence prior to the 06 elections, which nobody could understand. Despite perhaps having lost 50 seats, the Republicans came away having in reality given up 30 seats, and so maybe his confidence was a bit overstated. But we have questions sent into this show online, and Rob from Canada is asking a question that we are already on. He would like to know if and why the media stays quiet about election problems and fraud. And I think you've suggested at least a very partial answer in the listening to what's coming out of the Democratic Party and assuming that that's the opposition party, whereas it's actually something quite corrupt. But is there not more to it? Why the media's silence?
Well, I, having talked to a lot of reporters and some editors having talked to a lot of leading Democrats, including John Kerry, by the way, let me say this parenthetically, who told me to my face on October 28th, 2005, that he did believe the election of 2004 was stolen. Okay? He did. I talk about all this in the afterword to Fooled Again. He told me this, and he told me this with some vehemence, I might add. I mean, it completely amazed me. It blew my mind. When I talked about this exchange with him a week later on Democracy Now!, within 3 hours, his office released a statement categorically denying that we'd ever had the conversation. Now, the question as to why the media ignores the story has everything to do with the question why Kerry's office denied a conversation he'd had with me. And it isn't just that Kerry was afraid people would think he was a loony, see, because my view is that if he really believed, if he really accepted in his heart, you know, he really internalized the knowledge that the election was stolen, as opposed to understanding it just intellectually, he wouldn't care a pin if people call him names. See, what I'm suggesting is that the press, the Democratic Party, the establishment in general, this is not the case with the population of this country, the people are different, but the establishment simply cannot allow itself to see this evidence. It simply cannot go there, you know? I mean, there are so many stories like Warren County that the New York Times, for example, just refuses to cover. And when you talk to reporters, you know, it's very similar to when I talked to Kerry. I talked to others like Jerry Nadler, one of the representatives from New York and a very liberal guy. When you talk about this, you see, you know, behind the front of their eyes, as it were, a kind of door swings shut. They suddenly can't hear what you're saying, you know, because they can't let themselves face the really, you know, awesome fact that we don't live in a democracy in this country, that the ruling party in this country is far closer to fascism than it is to anything like real conservatism, you know. This is something that, as I say, at the grassroots level, people can really accept. I've been all over the country. I've talked about this. I've done talk radio. And by no means all of it liberal, and by no means have I been only to places like Berkeley and New York. People get it, you know, but the establishment, with very few exceptions, simply won't go there. And I think it's primarily psychological. And let me add that is complicated by the fact that in all these cases, you know, these people have a material investment in not venturing into forbidden territory. You know, their jobs are on the line, their credibility is on the line, so it's a kind of combination of careerism, you know, that kind of self-protection, because the media, as we know, is owned by, you know, the corporate powers, a combination of that kind of careerism and old-fashioned refusal to face something that's just too painful to face.
Yes, in fact, Senator Kerry was until all too recently harboring delusional thoughts of running again for the presidency.
Right.
with a new campaign of all defense and fear all the time. And so who knows? But I want to remind people quickly how to get in on this conversation. You can call the People Speak Radio. This is David Swanson, and our guest this evening is Mark Crispin Miller. You can call us toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada at 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494, or anywhere else in the world, 877-489-6350. And we are coming up against a break, but I wanted to get in one more related question that came in by email. Joe from Ontario asks, how does the mainstream media view Mark and his views and book, or do they even interview him?
No, I've been blacked out by the mainstream media, and I've also been blacked out by NPR, which is quite a story, because before Fooled Again came out, I was frequently on all of NPR's national shows. But this is sort of the third rail, you know, to say that the election system doesn't work. In the eyes of the mainstream media, you know, it's not even a matter of being accused of lunacy, or of having people say your facts are all garbled. No, that doesn't even happen. It's just total silence. Now the reviews of Fooled Again, which were largely in alternative weeklies and online and so on, I got great blurbs from people like, Governor Don Siegelman of Alabama, who's now rotting away in a federal prison, and John Conyers and Joe Wilson and people like that. But when it comes to the major dailies, the TV networks, the NPR stations, so far it has been forbidden. And this is something that I think can and must change because, we're in very serious trouble as a republic if we can't even prevent the election of the far worst of two evils, which I think is what's been happening since 2000.
Well, I want to ask you about Chairman John Conyers and what, if anything, Congress has been doing. And I want to talk with you about your 12 steps to improve things, which might be the best way to get into this topic in the short time we have left. But we have to take a break, and we will be back for another half hour with Mark Crispin Miller on the People Speak Radio right after this.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
According to polls, a majority of Americans support the impeachment of Dick Cheney. To make people aware of this, the Honk to Impeach campaign has been organized. People will be carrying Honk to Impeach signs in front of congressional district offices and TV and radio stations. Visit ImpeachSpace.com and ImpeachCheney.org for updates of this effort. And don't forget to honk for impeachment.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.com.
And we are back on the PeopleSpeakRadio.net. This is David Swanson, and our guest for another half hour this evening is Mark Crispin Miller, the author, among many other books, of Fooled Again and the forthcoming Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy, 2000 to 2008. You can get in on this conversation with your questions and comments with Mark Crispin Miller from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, toll-free, 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, or anywhere else in the world, 877-489-6350. And, Mark, we were talking over the break about your book, Fooled Again, which carries on the front cover right at the top these words from now House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers, Jr., there is no more important issue facing our nation than the right to vote, and no more important book on this point than Fooled Again. And yet, very little done in that committee over the past year and a half. I understand there may be some hearings coming up, and yet my question would be, and this may seem slightly off the topic, with the congressman having taken impeachment off the table, precisely what we elected all of these Democrats in 2006 for, to give him the chairmanship so he could act on impeachment, which he, after all, had written an extensive book himself on three years ago, what power does he have? He seems to be asking witnesses to come in on this and other issues, and they laugh at him. Whether he subpoenas them, writes them a letter, they laugh, they don't come in, or they come in and they can't remember anything prior to that morning's breakfast. Does Chairman Conyers, does Congress, does the Democratic Party, does anyone in Washington take this as seriously as that quote suggests?
Well, I think maybe a few people in Washington take it seriously. I'm as chagrined as you are by the failure of the House Judiciary Committee to move on impeachment. I mean, if we're not going to impeach Bush, my view is we should just, you know, have a constitutional convention and take the impeachment article out of the Constitution. What do we need it for, you know?
Well, for sex. For Democrats and for sex, right?
Right, exactly. For sex. I guess we should keep it in then. The thing is, the House Judiciary Committee is planning hearings on specifically on the Department of Justice's collusion in election fraud and vote suppression, and I have been talking to them about testifying. So they, you know, that's a sort of partial answer to your question. As for their sort of timorous attitude towards people like Ken Blackwell, who's, you know, completely corrupt and demented Ohio Secretary of State who was intimately involved in the theft of Ohio, I have a feeling that as on impeachment, so on this issue, Conyers has probably been swayed by his party, by Pelosi, by Reid, by these people. Whether they all woke up one morning with horses' heads in their beds or whether they're just naturally spineless, I don't know. I can't say. I don't live in Washington, thank God, and I don't know. But the thing is that we are going to come to a moment of reckoning. You know, I predict, and I say this without any glee whatsoever, the American people are going to come to a moment of reckoning when push is going to come to shove, and somebody's going to have to stand up on behalf of the Constitution. The Democrats don't seem to be inclined to do it. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons why Conyers and others don't push the point is that they're afraid to come to that point, don't you?
Clearly. I mean, Conyers offers a variety of excuses, in fact, and it's not clear to what extent they're just excuses and he's simply obeying Nancy Pelosi and to what extent he believes them. But the general theme is that it would be bad for the elections and elections are more important, which is, of course, called into doubt by, among so many other things, the discussion we're having here about whether we can be sure our votes will even be counted.
Well, that's absolutely right. I have good reason to believe that people like Conyers are worried, at least they say this, that if they try to impeach Bush, it will make Bush look sympathetic, and this will jeopardize the seats of those Democrats who were elected in 2006. We're talking about the 29 who were elected, not the 20 or so who were robbed of their election in 2006. You know, the argument that those people might be on shaky ground, that they weren't elected by much, is of course predicated on the assumption that the vote counts weren't tampered with. There's an essay in Loser Take All, a great essay by Jonathan Simon and Bruce O'Dell, called Landslide Denied, which explains precisely what the Republicans did in 2006. They gave themselves a 4-point advantage by fiddling with the memory cards in a whole lot of states in this country, so that although they ended up losing because the 4-point advantage turned out not to be enough, they gave themselves an artificial boost in the vote count, which has left us with the impression that the Democrats managed to squeak by in like 29 congressional districts. I think that if the Republicans had not done that, it wouldn't have been a thumping in 2006, to use Bush's phrase. It would have been a rout, and the Republican Party would have been consigned to political oblivion, you know, completely destroyed. But they, you know, again, you know, that party and the far right and the, you know, the party's corporate allies, you know, are on a kind of artificial life support, which is based to a great extent on election fraud and to a further extent on the domination of the media, you know, by corporate interests. These things, the vote count and the media, give us the impression that the far right in this country is far more numerous than it really is. See, this is an important reason why the issue we're discussing matters so much. You know, a lot of liberals and Democrats are spooked. They're intimidated because they mistakenly believe that the right is far more powerful than it really is. And this is what causes, you know, Democrats like Obama and Clinton, both, if I may say so, this is what leads to them, you know, attacking right all the time, using right-wing rhetoric, and, you know, casting right-wing votes in the Senate and so on. So, you know, we're locked in a kind of illusion, you know, that's based on the official numbers.
I think it's an excellent point, and it needs to be said over and over again in the media. And what was interesting in 2006 was that you didn't even see the independent and online voices on election fraud that you saw in 2004. There was a general assumption that because the Democrats took 30 seats, even if they might have rightfully claimed 50, the election was honest. And I was stunned by the parallel that we saw recently in Pakistan, where you heard voices on the ground saying fraud, fraud, corruption, suppression, and yet because the opposition won so many seats, it was deemed an honest election. And fittingly enough, we sent Senator John Kerry over there to reassure us that it was a good enough election for government work. And the results would seem to be parallel as well. This Congress in the United States, afraid to impeach Bush or Cheney, that Congress, that Parliament, falling short of impeaching Musharraf. What did you think of seeing John Kerry sent over there as the guardian of clean elections?
Well, I felt the same way you did about it. I thought it was pathetic and yet oddly predictable. You know, there's a great journalist over there in Pakistan. I mean, I'm sure there are many, but I know one named Bina Sarwar, S-A-R-W-A-R, who's been vigorously reporting on the fraud over there. I've been in touch with her. You know, we're in the same boat with those people. You know, this is something that you could never, ever say to, like, Charlie Rose, you know, because we're the city on a hill, and we can't be compared to these primitive countries where they have tanks in the streets. Well, the fact is, we're in the same boat with Pakistan and Mexico and Armenia, places like that. So, you know, what we're really talking about here is a global problem. You know, democracy is under real attack, you know, and it's not that different here from the way it is in Russia. One of the most heartbreaking things to me is that most people abroad, apparently, certainly the journalists and a lot of just regular citizens all over the world, are perplexed and horrified that we voted for Bush in 2004. And you know, it's hard enough to envision trying to reverse public opinion in one country as big as this. The prospect of kind of, you know, reverse public opinion globally is kind of crushing, you know. I don't know how one does that, but something like that must be done because, you know, we need a kind of global solidarity movement on behalf of democracy. You know, a little bit like what the ANC found when it was fighting apartheid. They had the support of the world. Well, you know, we who are fighting for democracy worldwide need to get together. You know, and if anyone has any ideas, you know, I'm all ears. Maybe we should talk about my 12 steps so we can kind of move out of this apocalyptic vein into one that's a little less.
We should, but I think you're exactly right, and that it would be completely selfish on the part of the world, which experiences mass murder among other things as a result of the shortcomings of our democracy here in this country. So,
well, no kidding. You know, there was a British polling firm just did an estimate of how many Iraqis perished thanks to Bush's war. They did this by interviewing people and asking them how many family members had died. So it was a pretty methodologically sound analysis. The figure they came up with was 1,200,000. I mean, that's beyond obscene, you know, especially because we're over there supposedly trying to enforce democracy at gunpoint. We, you know, the president who was elected by his brother's corrupt political machine in Florida and then reelected through massive election fraud. And let me make clear to your listeners, David, not just in Ohio. The stuff that happened in Ohio, as you know from reading Fooled Again, happened nationwide. You know, stuff with the machines flipping votes, not enough machines, all those things, they happened all over the South. They happened in Michigan. They happened, you know, in New Jersey. I mean, they happened all over the place. So, it's quite a daunting thing.
Let's bring one more caller in on this conversation before we get to the 12 steps to fix this problem. Mike from California, thanks for joining the People Speak Radio.
Hello, Mark. Thanks for being on the show. My question is the vote fraud and compromising of the vote confined mainly to Republicans, or are Democrats also doing it? As you know, Barack and Hillary are having a rather heated runoff here. Thank you.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'm glad you asked me that question because there is copious evidence that the Clintons have been engaging in vote suppression on a massive scale. And just to complicate the picture even further, there's also, as far as I'm concerned, significant evidence that the Republicans have used the voting machines on her behalf. You know, she argues that, you know, she's won all the big stakes, right? That's her argument for why she should be the nominee. But, I mean, I can go chapter and verse through Ohio, New York, California, Texas, and point out how, you know, her showing in those states is at best highly questionable. Now let's go back to New Hampshire for a moment, which is the moment that put her on top. And we got these typically brainless explanations from the press as to why it happened. Like she cried, remember that? Hillary cried, so at the last minute she won, right? I don't know how many of your listeners know this, David, but, you know, about 84% of the votes counted in New Hampshire are counted on optical scanners, you know, which are manufactured by the same bad companies that make the paperless machines. Hillary's, the vote count on those machines, Hillary won by a little over 4%. In the 16% of districts where they hand count the ballots, Obama won by just over 6%. This is unprecedented, and it's also inexplicable. You know, people have come up with all kinds of explanations for how it could have happened demographically. Not one of them holds water. Not one of them will withstand the slightest scrutiny. Now, the machines in New Hampshire and the company that programs them, called LHS Associates, these companies have Republican ties, and the machines generally, coast to coast, tend to be in the hands of Republicans. So I think that what has happened is that the Republicans have mischievously given her a boost, you know, both because they'd rather run against her than Obama, but also because they like the fact that the Democratic Party is riven in two, that works to their advantage. That will give them, I can't emphasize this strongly enough, that will give them a convincing rationale for John McCain's surprising victory. Because, you know, as far as the Republicans are concerned, it is not about getting people to vote for them. That's what we have to understand. They don't care so much about getting people to vote for them. What they care about is making the race seem close enough so that they can, quote, win it, unquote. But more importantly, coming up with a convincing narrative to explain that victory away. So in 2004, for example, it was the religious right. Remember this? The religious right turned out in unprecedented numbers. You know, like Jesus' loaves and fishes, all of a sudden there were millions of these Christians voting for Bush. This is statistically and demographically impossible. There weren't even a third enough such Christians to account for Bush's victory in 2004. Similarly, in 2008, you know, if it's vaguely close and John McCain wins, I promise you the explanation will be, well, the Democrats were divided. It was that bruising civil war between Hillary and Barack. At any rate, there's a lot of guilt in the Clinton camp when it comes to vote suppression, and I believe that she has also benefited from machine manipulation in these states.
Mark, with 3 minutes left in the program, let me read your 12 suggestions to fix this mess, and then you tell us where people can go to learn more. One, repeal the Help America Vote Act. Two, replace all voting machines, electronic voting machines, with hand-counted paper ballots. Three, get rid of computerized voter rolls. Four, keep all private vendors out of the election process. Five, make it illegal for the TV networks to declare who won before the vote count is complete. Six, set up an exit polling system, publicly supported, to keep the vote counts honest. We need to do that. Seven, get rid of voter registration rules by having every citizen be duly registered on his or her 18th birthday. Eight, ban all state requirements for state-issued IDs at the polls. Nine, put all polling places under video surveillance to spot voter fraud, monitor election personnel, and track the turnout. 10, have Election Day declared a federal holiday requiring all employers to allow their workers time to vote. 11, make it illegal for secretaries of state to co-chair political campaigns or otherwise assist or favor them. And 12, make election fraud a major felony with life imprisonment and disenfranchisement for all repeat offenders. In 2 minutes, what else can you tell us about that, and where can people go to find out more?
Well, there's a couple of groups I can recommend to people just to get more information. One is the Election Defense Alliance. You can just do a Google search on that. That's the group that has the savviest and most meticulous election analysts as its top members. And then there's a group called Why Tuesday, has a question mark at the end. Why Tuesday? This is a group that came out of the online effort on behalf of Howard Dean. Jacob Soboroff, who runs Why Tuesday, completely gets it on the problems of election fraud and vote suppression. And I can't say that about so many progressive advocacy groups, you know, like Move On and Common Cause and People for the American Way, all of which support the use of optical scanners and other technological fixes, you know, to try to, you know, solve our problems. So those are the two groups I would recommend. The most important thing that people need to do is to get the facts, you know, and spread the word and pressure the media and, if possible, their Democratic representatives. So I have much hope for them. You know, the media has got to report this issue. This has got to become like a top story, you know. I can recommend Brad Friedman's blog, bradblog.com, which is excellent. My own blog is called News from Underground. The address is markcrispinmiller.com. And, you know, we should be sharing information, and we should be spreading the word, because, you know, until everybody out there knows for a fact that their intuitions that something's wrong are based on a solid foundation. I mean, most people sense that something's really wrong with our elections, but the establishment doesn't give them the information so that they'll know that those intuitions are sound. So until, you know, we all know for a fact what's been going on, we're not going to get anywhere. But I predict that once people do get it, once they do know what's been going on, you know, there will be no stopping the movement for election reform, which, you know, fittingly enough, has to involve the people. This can't be the work of some small elite of dedicated activists who play inside baseball with certain members of Congress. We have to get beyond that. The people have to push for this. So basically I'm saying it's ultimately up to everyone out there both to learn what's happening and to spread the word and to work with other people, you know, because, I mean, this is corny, but united we stand, you know, divided we fall. And right now, we're all quite dangerously divided.
It's an excellent note on which to end an outstanding program, Mark. I can't tell you how much we appreciate your joining us for the past hour, and I would recommend highly that everyone pick up a copy of Fooled Again and of the forthcoming Loser Take All. Mark Crispin Miller is the author of those books. Next Tuesday on the People Speak Radio, Michael Parenti, author of Democracy for the Few and Contrary Notions. And a week from tonight, next Wednesday, I will be interviewing one of the Winter Soldiers. And if you don't know what that means, Google Winter Soldier, another story that needs to make it into the news. Back with you again next week at thepeoplespeakradio.net.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall by the relief fountain, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest, to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.